Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
At all. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. Time's 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, February 25th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Capital Region and beyond, accepting most commercial and managed care insurance plans, offering a range of oral and maxillofacial surgery, AdirondackOralSurgery.com. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Megan Applewhite, an endocrine surgeon. She's terrific at Albany Medical Center. She specializes in treating patients with diseases of the thyroid and adrenal glands. Her area of studies include quality of life in thyroid cancer survivors and the surgeon-patient relationship. This promises to be a busy show. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Megan Applewhite, your call is all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today on Medical Monday is a wonderful guest, Dr. Megan Applewhite of Albany Medical Center. She's an endocrine surgeon, an assistant professor of surgery and biomedical ethics, and the interim director of the Alden March Bioethics Institute at Albany Medical College. Dr. Applewhite specializes in treating patients with diseases of the thyroid, parathyroids, and adrenal glands. She's also fellowship trained in medical ethics. Her area of study includes quality of life in thyroid cancer survivors and the surgeon-patient relationship. Welcome. Welcome, Dr. Megan Applewhite. It's so good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, okay, so the first question, of course, is what does the thyroid do?
So the thyroid is kind of our main command station for metabolism. So it secretes thyroid hormone that effectively allows our metabolism, heart rate, blood pressure, all these things to be regulated.
Really? So it's a sort of little thing in your car that handles all of the various commands.
Sure. Yep.
How often do they go bad?
There are a handful of ways that they could go bad. We usually divide it into two different sort of ways to think about it. You can have functionality changes, which would be that the thyroid become hyperfunctional to function too much, or hypofunctioning, where it doesn't work well enough. And both of those are correctable problems. And then on the other hand, you can have a thyroid that grows nodules in it. And those nodules can become large and can cause compressive symptoms on the neck. It can also be that those nodules can become cancerous and need to be removed for that reason.
So when you go in there looking, how big is a thyroid?
So it depends on the person. You know, a normal size thyroid might be, 4.5 centimeters tall on each side.
That's big.
Yeah.
I also thought of the thyroid as a tiny little thing.
Yeah, they can grow to be tremendously large. And it's sort of a butterfly-shaped gland. And so there's about a 4 or 5 centimeter length on each side. And then there's the isthmus, which is the bridge that connects the two lobes.
Isn't that interesting? Now, how much do you know before you go in? In other words, now in a time of CAT scans and everything else that we have, how likely is it that you'll be surprised when you see what you got?
Unlikely.
Unlikely.
Yeah, ultrasounds are the best study for looking at the thyroid gland, and they're readily accessible. We have one in our clinic, so I look at everybody's thyroid before I operate on it. And frequently, we have all of our necessary lab tests and everything done well in advance so that we're rarely surprised in the operating room.
So here's a question that you guys get a lot of over there at Albany Medical. Are you as good? I mean, if somebody that's listening now has thyroid cancer, are they better off going to Boston or to New York City, or can you keep up with the best of them?
Well, I'd like to think that we keep up with the best of them. I have a couple of excellent partners, Dr. Todd Beyer and Dr. Larry Robinson, and all three of us do a significant amount of endocrine operations. And the data are crystal clear that the higher number of operations you do, the better your outcomes are. So doing, you know, 6-7 thyroidectomies a week will make you better than someone who does one or two a month.
Ectomy meaning you take them out?
Yes, right. Okay. Yes.
And if somebody has it taken out, what happens then?
So if you take out the entire thyroid gland, you support the patient then on levothyroxine or Synthroid for the rest of their lives, a dose that can sort of vary based on their weight and their own personal metabolism, but is usually a weight-based dosing. If you take out half of a thyroid lobe, about 80% of the time, the patient doesn't end up needing any supplemental thyroid hormones. So when we can minimize the operation that we do, we favor that to keep them off of thyroid hormone if we can.
Now, you mentioned levothyroxine, which I happen to be on, and I think half the world is too. How come it's such a popular drug?
It's a good drug and it works. It's thyroid hypofunctioning is something that really does debilitate a lot of people if it's bad, if it's, you know,
hypo meaning too fast.
Too low. If it's not functioning, hypo, if their thyroid isn't functioning enough and they get put on some supplemental thyroid hormone, exactly, it can change their lives for the better. The low functioning glands are something that trouble a lot of people. So Synthroid is a good drug and it works really well. And most people have very few side effects from it. So by and large, it is a good drug to give to people if they're having a little bit of low function.
So who picks up on this? In other words, is this done by blood test? How do people say, uh-oh?
Yeah, so frequently, if someone goes into their primary care doctor and complains of fatigue or complains of, difficulty getting their energy back, they don't have enough energy to exercise, they feel like they're gaining weight and it's sort of beyond their control for exercise and diet, the primary care doctor will check their thyroid function. And so it's a normal lab result to get, say your annual exam if you're feeling, a little bit low energy. And from there, either primaries will refer them to an endocrinologist or they'll try to manage it themselves and put them on a little bit of hormone replacement.
Do you guys in the surgery biz work well with the endocrinologists who basically are more diagnostic than they don't operate, obviously?
Yes, absolutely. We work hand in hand with them and really do rely on them a lot for pre and post-operative care with our patients.
So political. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, you want to get in on this? Now's the time to don't wait until the end. What are you? Don't procrastinate. We've got a Jim in Matamoros. Jim, welcome back to the program. What do you got?
Anything new in the treatment of Addison's disease?
You know, I don't treat Addison's disease myself since it isn't a surgical problem, so I'm not really up to date on the current literature for management of Addison's. But certainly it is a disease that is being well managed by endocrinologists, and hopefully the research goes on to attempt to manage it well.
Well said. Thank you, Jim. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You want to get your question asked, listen to Alan. Do it now. Don't wait till the end and yell at me later that I didn't take your call. Okay, let's go to Dina in Newburgh. Hi, Dina.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. My question is, a friend told me that when she has a mammogram that the technician uses a shield to cover her thyroid. I have never heard of that. Is that something in practice, and can the doctor speak to that, please?
Hi. So, you know, when getting a mammogram, the radiation that's delivered is pretty localized, just to the breasts. That having been said, for the radiation technologists who are around, in the mammogram suite all the time, they probably are exposed to an undue amount of radiation as compared to others. And certainly we know that the thyroid tissue is very susceptible to radiation, and it can cause thyroid cancer. It can even cause hyperparathyroidism. So
what's that?
So that's overactive parathyroid glands, which are these four little glands that sit around the thyroid gland itself. Mm. And their job is to regulate the calcium secretion in your blood. So the idea is this, you have overactive parathyroid glands, that you have elevated calcium levels, and that can be troublesome. So, you know, I would say if you're getting a mammogram, I don't think that wearing a thyroid shield is necessarily something that has to be done. But if you're a radiation tech who's continuously administering tests involving radiation, it's probably a good idea.
Well, do you wear a badge?
I don't, because I'm not around radiation very frequently.
Right. Yeah. And do you use something like fluoroscopy as you go? In other words, in order to guide you?
Nope, we don't need to. We make a 3 to 4 centimeter incision low in the neck, and we can visualize everything that we need to directly.
Right. Do you do it alone, or do you have somebody work with you?
I usually have a resident assisting me in the cases, and we have any number of techs and nurses and anesthesiologists that all are part of our team in the OR.
Okay, Dina, go ahead.
Thank you. A quick follow-up. Is there any vitamins or supplements that interfere when you have your serum levels taken? Because my thyroid was up over 5, and then I stopped taking some multivites, and then it was down to like 2. So is there any specific type of supplement that interferes with your tests for thyroid?
That's a good question. If you're taking a consistent diet and a consistent number of supplements, there isn't one particular medication that will necessarily not allow the thyroid medication to work as well. But people, if they're taking excessive amounts of calcium or, you know, large amounts of other vitamins, will tend to space those out from their levothyroxine dosage so that it can be continuously sort of at a same level, you know, throughout the day.
So that's a great question.
I'm not taking any medications for thyroid. It's just that my levels go up and down, and I'm wondering what's causing it.
I see. People can have small fluctuations in their levels. That having been said, if it's something dramatic, you know, between, if it's normal and abnormal between tests, I would say go and see an endocrinologist, and they may be able to hash that out with you. There's nothing directly in terms of supplements and things that I know of that should change that.
Dina, thank you. We have to take a break right now, and we will, and we'll be right back. And we are back, and we are delighted to be here with Dr. Megan Applewhite of the Albany Medical Center, endocrine surgeon, assistant professor of surgery and biomedical ethics, and an interim director of the Alden Marsh Bioethics Institute at Albany Medical College. Well, we can go in a lot of different directions, but let's clean up what we have here. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to ask a question about your thyroid, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we will go to Mary in Woodstock. All right, Mary, you're on.
Hi. Doctor, I didn't get your name. Is it Applewhite?
It is, yep.
And how can I make an appointment with you?
You can call.
Or should I go to the clinic?
You can call my office. I can give you the number.
Sure.
It's 518.
Yes, I'll take the number. Do you have an 800 number?
No, it's a 518 number to the clinic.
Okay, 518.
262.
Six.
No,
six,
two.
Two.
Mary. 518-262. Go ahead.
262.
Yeah.
0940.
0940. Okay, Mary.
158-262-0940.
Okay, it's 518, actually. Okay. Mary,
for many years, I have been diagnosed by several doctors that are friends, and one said I have a parathyroid hypo problem, and the other said I had a parathyroid hyper, and I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue, for many years, and
Mary, we
have
a lot of
I cannot keep warm or cold. My temperature fluctuates winter, summer, spring, and fall, and I suffer from severe fatigue. They said I could have gone on disability under depression. And I was very depressed often.
Mary, I hate to Mary, you got to listen to me. Yeah. I hate to cut you off. Here's what's happening. There are six people behind you, so we need you to ask your question. Is there a specific question you have?
Yes.
Go ahead.
How do I know if I have hyperparathyroid or hypoparathyroid problem?
Good question. Go ahead, Doc.
So hypoparathyroid, congenital hypoparathyroidism is an extraordinarily rare condition. Certainly it exists, but it's very unusual. The more likely situation that you're in is with hyperparathyroidism, and that can cause extreme fatigue, it can cause depression, it can cause frequent urination in the middle of the night. It can cause a lot of sort of nonspecific symptoms that can really make you feel less
I
like yourself.
I have all those symptoms.
Yeah, so, you know, the way to know definitively is to get your blood.
Mary, you got to listen to the doctor. You asked the question, now she's answering.
Go ahead. No problem. So the way to know definitively is to get some blood levels checked and maybe a urine level. And we can always get some imaging studies as well that can help decide.
Okay, thank you, Mary. All right, now we'll go to Patricia in Greenfield. All right, Patricia, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Patricia.
I'd like to know, I have hypothyroidism, and I have to take levothyroxine, and I have had much better success with Synthroid, and yet the Synthroid is much more expensive. So I wonder, do you have any advice along those lines of the direction to go?
It's a very good question. I think that a lot of people find themselves in your situation where the levothyroxine is the generic name of the generic drug, but the Synthroid specifically works better for them. Unfortunately, there's no exact compound of Synthroid that's out there that isn't generic or that is as inexpensive as the generics. But to be honest, I think if you do have success with the Synthroid, although it is expensive, it is an excellent drug, as we were saying before, so it's probably worth sticking with, unfortunately.
Okay, Patricia, thank you.
Okay, is there any extra supplement that taking maybe with the levothyroxine would be helpful to the thyroid? I'm missing half my thyroid too, so I have to get it.
Yes. So Synthroid itself is the T4 hormone. The T3 hormone is a hormone that you could get separately from your endocrinologist, and so that could theoretically supplement that precursor hormone, which is the T3 that ultimately ends up getting converted to T4 that some people find to be of benefit.
Thank you, Patricia. Okay, now on to Pat in Warwick. Pat in Warwick, here you go. You're on, Pat.
Hello,
you're on.
I just have a quick question. I've been on Synthroid for years, but I switched about 4 years ago to Armour Thyroid. Do you have any feelings about that? Being on the Armour, the natural, instead of the Synthroid?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The endocrinologists are the ones who basically manage that. So I don't have a lot of personal experience with it. That having been said, what I understand is it can be a little bit trickier to determine the right level for you. You know, and if you're on the natural hormone, it's less easy to track that. The endocrinologists, from what I understand, have a harder time dosing it as regularly as they do with the Synthroid. But unfortunately, that's about as much as I can tell you about it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks for the call. All right. Okay, and now on to, let's see here, James in Hudson. All right, James, you're on.
Hi, I was asymptomatic, but I went to my doctor and they did some blood work and they said that, oh, I had a hypothyroid, and they put me on the one that you're talking about. I was looking for the, see if I still had the drug, but I threw it away. And I had, like, I didn't take it for a while because I felt fine. Then I did take it for the prescribed dose, and I had really bad side effects. Like, just, you know, like, I had problems when I didn't have problems before. And then, so then I stopped taking it. And it took me almost a year to, like, get back to kind of normal. And if I'm going to a new doctor, what questions should I ask them before they put me on something else?
What kind
because
of symptoms
really
did you
have?
Have
a problem.
What kind of symptoms did you have?
Side effects?
Yeah.
Do you have an upset stomach?
I didn't. I started gaining weight instead of losing it. I was a little overweight, but not much. I sort of lost my libido. I got more lethargic. It was just like the opposite of what it should have done.
Yeah, certainly that's unusual for being of an extra thyroid hormone. But I think, you know, I think sometimes we don't have a good understanding of why people react the way they do to specific medications. You know, what I would have your new doctor do is recheck the levels. And if you're at a place where you feel comfortable and you feel you don't have any symptoms one way or the other, and your labs are pretty borderline, even if they are a little bit abnormal, I would just ask to not be put on the medication or, you know, find a different, you know, like the Armour thyroid, like the last caller was talking about, maybe a different type of the medication.
Well,
that's what
I've heard is that actually basically if there was a problem that the other one is actually a lot better. And I've actually heard this anecdotally from other people that basically they've had bad reactions to, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not a doctor. But, you know, anecdotally that people have had bad reactions to the synthetic one.
Yeah, certainly some people, I would say by and large, most people tolerate Synthroid and levothyroxine very well. But you're right, there are a handful of people out there that have a really hard time with it. And for those people, I do think that looking at another option like the Armour thyroid is a good one.
Okay, thank you very much, James. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And now we go to Michelle in Warwick. All right, Michelle, you're on.
Well, good afternoon. I have two questions for the doctor. One is, I got my first thyroid tumor when I was 18. I since have three total now, and I also had a couple minor strokes in 2014. My doctor had suspected a pheo, and I'm using that because I can't say the whole word. after I had the last stroke, the insurance wouldn't do an MRI because they said it's such a rare disease, she doesn't have it. And then after the last stroke, the hospital did it, and they found the tumor in the adrenal. But my first question is, when I took my dad for a checkup at the VA, he has leukemia from Agent Orange. And the endocrinologist asked me if I had heard of Agent Orange Legacy. And I was wondering, since I can't find much about it, if you knew anything about it.
I don't. I'm so sorry.
So I take it you're post-Vietnam, in other words. You were born.
Yes. My dad was in Vietnam. And she said it's like a disease that tends to attack the endocrine system, often with a lot of tumors. And the children and grandchildren of these men tend to get it. Unfortunately, the VA stopped the funding because they didn't want lawsuits, I guess.
So you got your answer. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, can I have one more question, Alan?
All right, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to have the adrenal tumor removed because the spikes, the quality of life is really bad at this point. But every doctor I go to really scares me and says how dangerous the surgery is. I was just wondering your thoughts on that.
That's a good question.
So adrenal operations are certainly they're rarer-ish operations, and you should only go to a surgeon that does a reasonable number of them if you're going to have it done. When it is about a pheochromocytoma, the pheo that you have, that is a really good reason to operate because it can cause, as you're saying, a lot of blood vessel problems. It can cause high blood pressure that is, you know, that can result in strokes. It can cause high heart rates that can result in, you know, other cardiac troubles. And in the long run, it's a dangerous tumor to have for your cardiovascular system. So I think that it is a reasonable thing, if it's been confirmed as your diagnosis, to have it removed.
Do you do them?
Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much. All right, 1-800-348-2551. Here's one that came in on the interweb, as Ray always says. I'm interested in the thyroid-iodine connection. I'm on a low-sodium diet and have had virtually no added iodized salt for the last 6 to 8 years. I add no table salt to my food when baking, cooking, and eating. In addition, I eat very little seafood or dairy, both good sources of iodine. I have many symptoms of hypothyroidism, yet my TSH is approximately 2.3, so my doctor says I'm fine. I know the RDA is 150 milligrams, I guess. Is there MCG? Is that milligram? What is MCG?
Micrograms.
Micrograms. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Is there a lower limit of MCGs one should eat in a dish in a day to stay healthy? Sincerely, Jane.
I'm not sure of the minimum amounts of iodine to consume daily. I would say, by and large, most Americans get it in their salt, and so we rarely have problems with iodine deficiency here. But if this person is having exceptionally low intake of iodine intentionally, I'm not really sure how much is the minimum requirement, to be honest.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's go to Rachel in Amherst, one of my favorite towns in our whole area. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi there. So I just started working as a night nurse about a year and a half ago, and I feel like I might have something wrong with my thyroid because my sleep schedule is completely wacky and I'm always tired and I gained weight, and I'm not sure if it could be my thyroid or if it just could be side effects from being a night nurse.
It's a really good question. So there are so many hormones that are at play involved in our circadian rhythm and when we sleep and when we wake. And I would say that certainly it's reasonable to get your thyroid function checked. One of the interesting parts about our metabolism is we have these hormones called leptin and ghrelin. And leptin is the hormone that makes us feel full. And they've done sleep studies in people who have effectively been sleep restricted. So they haven't gotten enough sleep intentionally. And then they check these leptin levels and they're low. So you're less likely to feel full when you're sleep deprived.
Okay.
So sort of as we're tending toward this 24-hour society where we're sleepless and we're up all the time, we're gaining weight because we don't feel satiated after we eat. That having been said, that's just one player in the circadian rhythm hormone cycle. And certainly I do think it's reasonable to get your thyroid function checked.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rachel. All right. And now we're going to go to Kathleen in the Berkshires. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, yes. Thank you. I was wondering about the interaction, I don't know quite how to put this, between, I've been hyperthyroid for over 20 years and on levothyroxine, but recently diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And I'm just wondering about the effect of one on the other.
Probably not too connected. They're probably two distinct entities. Although a very good question.
Somebody should do some research on
that.
Thank
you.
One.
Yeah, I think the truth is we don't know everything. So.
Idiopathic. Thank you, Kathleen.
There doesn't seem to be much change, but I've worried about that and just haven't pursued an answer with my doctor,
yeah,
I guess.
Not that I know of.
Good question.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Kathleen.
Also, I don't know if this is appropriate, but the difference between type 1 diabetes and type 2, because they're really very different diseases, right?
They are.
There was a time when they thought type 1 was only, the onset was juvenile, but evidently that's not true anymore.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
No. Kathleen, thank you. All right. Now we're going to go to Louise in Wurtsboro. All right, Louise, your turn.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, doctor. Yes, I have hyperparathyroidism, and I'm supposed to schedule surgery
And my question is how many do you perform per week, let's say?
Per week? One or two.
Really? Oh. Mm-hmm. And because they say the more, that's supposed to be a good number if I'm supposed to have that surgery. And the other question is it usually minimally invasive surgery that you perform?
It is. And pointing out minimally invasive for each type of the body is kind of different, right? So when we're talking about a minimally invasive operation of the belly, we think about laparoscopic operations or robotic operations. And when we talk about it for the neck, we effectively mean that we are minimizing the size of our incision just to focus exactly on what we need to get out and make it no bigger than we need to. And certainly I strive to achieve that.
Louise, we have a little break here we got to go to, but thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. We're back. I tell you, we're back. And we are here with Dr. Megan Applewhite of Albany Medical Center, endocrine surgeon, assistant professor of surgery and biomedical ethics. Doc, you're going to have to come back another time just to talk to us about biomedical ethics.
I'd be happy to.
Because that's a whole other program. And so today, for now, we're sticking with the thyroid, the parathyroids, and like that, as we say. So now we're going to go to Missy, who's been holding on from Sunderland, Massachusetts. Hi, Missy.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just wondering, I have a thyroid-stimulating hormone test that's within normal limits, a little bit on the low side, but 0.95. But I have many symptoms of hyperthyroid, and I've had kind of an extensive cardiac workup, and they can't figure out where it's coming from. So I have really fast heart rate, tremors, heat intolerance, sweating, a lot of stuff like that. So I'm wondering, is there ever a scenario where your thyroid stimulating hormones will be within normal limits, but your actual thyroid hormones might be out of whack?
That's a good question. Have you had your T3 and T4 checked?
I haven't. And I sort of asked my doctor, is it possible that even with this normal number, I could have some thyroid issues? And she told me the thyroid stimulating hormone, if that's normal, they won't go on to do T3 and T4, and I'm sort of questioning that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's a good idea to try to minimize any tests that you don't necessarily need, but I think it wouldn't be unreasonable to check your circulating hormone levels, your T3 and your T4. We can also do studies like thyroid uptake tests that will, they're nuclear medicine studies that effectively show how active the thyroid gland itself is. I think that there's a range of normal, and maybe some people's natural tendency is to want to be on the higher range of normal or the lower range of normal, and they become symptomatic if they're deviant at all from maybe where their body wants to be. So I think that we're all a little bit different, and if you are sort of on the borderline, I think it's worth getting worked up a little bit more, especially if it's resulting in cardiac workups and you just being generally uncomfortable. It'd be worth checking out for sure.
Thank you, Missy.
Okay, great. Okay, excellent.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's not too late. Let's go to, Ron in Rotterdam. Okay, Ron in Rotterdam, you're on.
Hello. Hi, Doc.
Hi.
First time caller. Parathyroid, kidney stones.
Yep. If you have hyperparathyroidism, your parathyroid glands can become overproductive and demand your bones release calcium. So your bones and your intestines and your kidneys all sort of release excess calcium, which can precipitate into the collecting system in the form of kidney stones.
Who knew?
Okay. Great. I've had the late 60s and early 70s. I had one every year.
Wow.
Just about.
Ouch.
And very painful. I like to let people know. And they went in to the parathyroid, the cluster in the thyroid. there's a cluster. They had to find one that was producing too much calcium, I guess.
Yep. Yep. And once you do that, then.
And I haven't had one ever since.
Thanks. Good. Thanks for the warning, Ron.
Success.
All right. 1-800-348-2551. Now they're calling. I knew this was going to happen. I warned you. I said in the beginning, does everybody remember? I said in the beginning, don't be waiting to call at the end, but that's what happened. You can. We welcome your calls, but we're going to go as fast as we can. And Kathy in Utica. All right, Kathy in Utica, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding consumption of tofu and thyroid functioning. Is there a relationship? Thank you. I'll listen.
No. Just stay on. We may want to ask you a question. Go ahead.
So it would kind of, you know, not immediately. If I think anything consumed in excess can certainly affect the balance of certain hormones. But I think, you know, sort of a standard consumption of tofu shouldn't have a big impact.
Diet Coke?
No.
Just kidding. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. And now we're going to go and talk to Gerald in Ulster Park. Okay, Gerald, your turn.
Hi. With hyperparathyroidism leading to osteoporosis, The surgical removal of some of the parathyroids reduces the excess hormone. There's also drugs to deal with osteoporosis, and I'm wondering if they work on an entirely different mechanism or if they might be reducing the hormone through the drug action.
That's a very good question. They work on a different pathway. The only actual cure for the elevated parathyroid hormone is surgery itself, although certainly these medications can mitigate the effects on the end organs.
Very good. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Gerald. All right. And now I take them in the order in which they come in. Jackie in Salem. All right, Jackie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I was recently discharged from the hospital. I had total thyroidectomy, and afterwards my parathyroid glands were stunned and they weren't producing calcium or they weren't regulating my calcium. So after, I guess, 7 days in the hospital and a 24-hour IV drip, I eventually my levels got back up to where they needed to be. So now I've been discharged and I'm on, vitamin D and calcium medication to regulate that. But my question is, since I've been discharged, my hands feel like they're swollen and tight all the time. And also my face is puffy. And I don't know if I'm retaining fluid for some reason, or that could somehow be related to the hypoparathyroidism. I'm just, trying to see if I can put the pieces together.
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. And it's not unusual postoperatively to have a little bit of bruising of those parathyroid glands after a thyroid operation. I'm glad that you're out of the hospital and that your levels have come back up. The swelling may be a result of you just having been in the hospital and having gotten a lot of IV fluids and theoretically been given a lot of medications that you're not used to. You're not moving around like normal. What I'll say about the hand tightness, as I'm sure you know, one of the symptoms of having low calcium, hypoparathyroidism, is sort of a numbness and tingling of your fingers and your toes and around your mouth. And that can progress to tightness and cramping in the hands and feet and calves if it progresses, beyond just the tingling phase. So, what I'd say is be sure that tightness in your hand isn't from low calcium itself.
Okay.
The puffiness in the face, I might just attribute to being in the hospital, having undue amounts of fluid and different medications, and hopefully that'll resolve.
Thank you, Jackie. Okay, and now on to Marta in Poughkeepsie, Po-town. All right, Marta, your turn.
Hi, Dr. Sertuk. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if the doctor acknowledges and probably knows that the air fresheners are endocrine system disruptors. And I see them like in public bathrooms and in people's homes, and I really worry for their health.
I don't know too much about that, to be honest. We don't really have them very frequently in the hospitals themselves, and you know, for obvious reasons. So I guess I don't really know about that literature.
Good answer. Thank you, Marta. All right, and now we're gonna go to okay, yeah, no question about it. We've got a Garrett in Cooperstown. Garrett, you're on. Garrett.
I think. Hello?
Hello, Garrett. Is that you?
No, this is Liz.
Okay, Liz, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question. I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism when I was very young, about 13. And I wondered, and I'm in my late 40s now, are there long-term effects from taking the levothyroxine and the... Mm-hmm. Synthroid for that many years?
Good question.
Yeah, good question. Not that we know of. And it's been a drug that's been around for a long time, and people stay on it for decades and decades and typically do very well.
Okay.
Nothing with osteoporosis that you've run across?
Nope.
Thanks, Liz.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, we're off to, I'm trying to keep ahead of this. It's not easy being me. Let's go to Roberta in Latham. All right, Roberta in Latham, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I recently decided to go to my primary care because I was on a Weight Watchers program and having trouble losing 10 pounds, which in the past had not been an issue for me at all. I don't have a lot to lose, but I've just been struggling for months, even though I followed the program. And I thought, maybe it's something with my metabolism. So the first test they did on my thyroid, a TSH and a T4, came back perfectly normal, high normal, but still normal. But I noticed on the bottom, there was a little disclaimer that said, if you're taking biotin, it could influence the results. So I talked to the doctor, and she said, get off the biotin, wait a couple of weeks, and then we'll redo the two tests, which they did. And when it came back this time, it came back where my TSH was 6.5 or 6.6. The T4 was still within normal limits, but the biotin was supposed to influence the T4, not the TSH. So the doctor said, well, it's still abnormal. You have hypothyroid, and we're now going to start you on levothyroxine. And I wanted to find out, could the biotin have really distorted the results that much and changed the TSH to an abnormal reading?
Okay, so that's the question. Here's the answer.
How far apart were the two TSHs drawn?
They were drawn about 2.5 weeks apart.
So I would say it would probably be worth it to draw another level about a month after you've stopped the biotin. It takes a little while for the TSH to really get a new normal after you've been taking a medication that could theoretically affect it. The T3 and the T4 are more dynamic, and so that would be a level that would change closer to the time of a new intervention or a new drug. But the T3 or the TSH just takes a little while to sort of catch up. So it's unclear to me why your level would have jumped your TSH if the biotin isn't supposed to affect that. But it might be worth a third check, sort of a month off of stopping the medication.
There's a plan.
Okay,
go ahead.
May I just ask you one follow-up question to that quickly? I just took my first levothyroxine this morning, and she wants to redo it. Redo the test in 6 weeks. Is that appropriate, or should I not start the levothyroxine at all?
So not having seen all of your information, I wouldn't want to contradict anything that your physician had said, but certainly checking a TSH 6 weeks after starting levothyroxine is the exact right course of action.
Cool.
Okay.
Thanks, Roberta. Okay, and now on to Catherine in Pittsfield. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, quick question. I take my grandson to the dentist. Every time he gets x-rays, I ask for the thyroid shield. Do you think that's important since he's young and he's going to have a lifetime of dental x-rays?
Yes, I think it's important for us all to wear thyroid shields when we're getting dental x-rays.
And that would be what, over your neck?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good point. Thanks, Catherine. All right, now on to Kathy in Clifton Park. Kathy in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
I was diagnosed with an enlarged thyroid, and they did tests, and the thyroid function is absolutely fine. It's just enlarged. So they recommended surgery to remove the thyroid. At this point, I'm not having any trouble breathing or swallowing, although they did say it was starting to press on my trachea. So my question is there any non-surgical procedure or process that I could undergo that would reduce the size of the thyroid without surgery?
Great question. We're running out of time, Doc.
So for some people, we'll get a radioactive iodine therapy treatment that can, you know, that will sometimes shrink the gland a little bit. Surgery is another an option that you can always do if that doesn't work. But both surgery and radioactive iodine treatment are both likely to leave you on a synthetic hormone, although it's less likely with the radioactive iodine.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, but there would be medicine for the rest of my life then, no matter which.
There's a possibility that with the radioactive iodine you wouldn't need to be on medication, but certainly with surgery you would be.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Welcome.
What do you do with all them thyroids when you take them out?
We send them to the pathologists.
What do? They put them in a jar?
They cut them up into thin slices and take a look at them to make sure we're not missing a cancer and to make sure that we know exactly what it is we've taken out.
Good question I just asked. Let's go to Margot in Saratoga Springs. Very quickly, Margot. We're running out of time. What
okay. Quick, very quick question. Length of time taking the – is it safe to eat a half an hour or do I have to wait a whole hour? They told me first to tell that I had to put an hour or a half hour, which
it's,
is...
It's a good question. As long as you're consistent, it almost doesn't matter. So as long as you do the same thing every day and give it a little bit of time, it's fine. I usually do tell people an hour because I think that, you know, that'll give it a little bit of regularity. The morning I tell them to put it by their bedside, take it. Then by the time they've brushed their teeth and taken a shower, they can eat breakfast an hour later. But, I think as long as you're consistent with your dosing, your body will absorb it at that rate, as long as you're not spacing it out a lot one day and a little bit the next.
Interesting.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much for that.
The interaction with other pills...
It does have some interactions with other pills, and in that case, you just need to space them out. So if you're taking a calcium supplement that you really do need to get absorbed for osteoporosis or for another reason, you need to space that out for an hour or two. And there are certainly more specific rules that can make it a little trickier to have simple dosing in the morning time.
Okay, thank you very much, Margot. Okay, so that's it. Doctor, what a wonderful guest you've been. Dr. Megan Applewhite of Albany Medical Center, an endocrine surgeon and assistant professor of surgery and biomedical ethics. She's already promised us another program in which she's going to come back and discuss biomedical ethics with us, which is terrific. We have basically no more time. So I want to just say thank you very much. You can always get us here at thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
For joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.